The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Good evening. You've got a topless episode by the Fire Breslow podcast presented by the Bastards of Boston Baseball. No shirts. Red Sox take down the San Francisco Giants 6-4. First time that Rafael Devers has come back to Fenway Park since the infamous trade last year. Charlie, number one, how you feeling? And what were your thoughts on Rafael Devers' reception? And just also, obviously the FU bomb that he hit.
Okay, let's go one at a time. I'm feeling good, a little hot out here, West Coast. So topless, Red Sox won, another reason. How do I feel about the home run? Not surprised. Our very own Terry Cushman called it out. I thought it was going to happen in the second game. I didn't think it was going to happen against Sonny Gray. I didn't think it was going to be back-to-back. Overall, I thought the reception was expected. I didn't think that he was going to receive a warm thing of hello and thank you, we miss you, because of the way that it ended so poorly. But I think above that, first and foremost, I think I'm back up to the Jeremy's height warmth level. I'm in the 6'6", 6'8" range again. And I have to look up to Jeremy in life. And then, you know, in this situation too, the Boston Red Sox have now won three of their last four. We kind of scuffled for a little bit, but now we're trending in the right direction. This is a really important series for Rafael Devers. The pressure is on. He's delivered. He went 1-for-3, had a home run, drew a walk. He did strike out, no surprise. But I'm feeling good about it. Am I disappointed that he didn't get like a standing go and whatnot? If he had left on better terms in a better way, probably, even though he was here his entire career, it didn't end the way it should have. That part sucked. But, you know, at the end of the day, he doesn't regret the way things went either. He's cool being a San Francisco Giant.
Yeah, as far as the reception, I was a little bit surprised. I thought it would be a little bit more balanced or a little bit more, I would say, cheers than boos during the video and then coming there. However, I'm also not mad that he got booed. Like, there was a pretty fair amount of boos, only because you saw the comments this morning, like they were questioning, like, hey, like, do you regret the trade? He's like, absolutely not, which I wouldn't expect him not to say that, especially since he's on a new team. He's with San Francisco. But his answer was no. It was also the answer that he gave the Boston Red Sox when they asked him to play first base. So he's really good at saying no when it comes to questions regarding the Boston Red Sox. So that's that. As far as, you know, the home run, I wasn't shocked. You were right. Terry Cushman was talking about it all day. We expected it. Terry was sitting there in his San Francisco Giant Devers footy pajamas, wishing it with his hands put together, and it happened. Okay. So I'm sure Terry was slightly happy. Luckily, it was a solo home run, which, I mean, if we're being honest, how many times have we seen a Devers solo home run at Fenway Park in a loss? We've come to get used to that as Red Sox fans.
Gladly, expectation.
Though, yeah, that's the expectation. Luckily, he's on another team now, and it turned out pretty well for the Red Sox tonight, so there's not much more I have to say about that. But speaking of Rafael Devers, I think it brings up an interesting player to kind of hone in on here, right? Because Wilson Contreras is kind of getting lit up a little bit, especially by us last night after him jawing with the fans and, you know, doing his stuff that he continues throughout the season. However, he hits a 3-run absolute moonshot. I think it went 450 feet. There was people on base, unlike Rafael Devers. But what's interesting about this whole thing is I think a lot of times when, you know, whether it's Terry or just other fans, right, that they're bringing up Rafael, it's like, man, we could really use that bat in the lineup. That's what we're looking for. And when you really kind of look at it, it's kind of what we have. And if we break it down, Wilson Contreras now plays first base for the Boston Red Sox, right? And when you break down their stats, Wilson Contreras, I believe, has 8 more RBIs. He's got 78. Rafael Devers has 70. The same amount of home runs. Wilson Contreras' batting average is a lot higher than Rafael Devers. He's at 285. Rafael Devers is, I believe, at 242, something in that, 245 after tonight. On base percentage, 396 for Wilson Contreras, 321 for Rafael Devers. Rafael Devers has 20 more strikeouts, but I think he has 70 more at-bats. Does that sound about right? So roughly he's striking out 25% more even on the difference of at-bats, which kind of adds up. So no matter how you slice it, Wilson Contreras has been a better and more impactful bat for the Boston Red Sox. If you just look at them apples to apples right now, I know there's arguments that if you put Devers in our ballpark, he hits more. He had that opportunity. This is all we got to go by. What are your thoughts on Wilson Contreras, number one, his moonshot, and then him now being the first baseman and him sort of kind of replacing that bat?
I think it's a really good point that you bring up. I mean, when you look at the numbers part don't – it just does not lie. You look at their numbers aligned next to each other. You got 117 versus 128 games, so 11 games difference. You mentioned the 79 total at-bats before action today. They got the same number of home runs, an 8 RBI variance, the same number of walks, a 20 strikeout variance. Contreras has a higher batting average. His on-base percentage is a little bit better. The slugging is better. The OPS is better. The WAR is more than twice higher. You're at 4.3 in relation to 1.8. Devers allegedly is 29 years old. Could be older. We don't really know. He looked a lot older in that video interview today.
They are the same age, Charlie. There's no doubt.
There's a chance they could be the same age, right? I think the other thing that we're not taking into consideration is, what's Wilson Contreras' contract this year? How much money is he making? And then Devers, in relation, is getting paid, I think, twice as much. It's insane, the difference. So you saved yourself a little money there, and people are going to say whatever they want. You got to give Breslow and the Red Sox a little bit of credit here. The Wilson Contreras experiment, even though he's a little bit older, it has worked out in our favor. We are doing all right with Wilson Contreras. He's 34. That moonshot was beautiful. It was perfect. Now, that said, a 90-mile-an-hour first-pitch fastball from Sonny Gray to Rafael Devers. Rafael Devers is the only left-handed hitter that I've seen play at Fenway Park that, depending on how he swings and finishes the swing, I know it's a home run. Any other left-handed hitter, there's a chance it could be caught. As soon as Devers hit that one, I knew it was a Devers bomb. That said, I'm still much happier that we have Wilson Contreras here, someone who wants to be here in Boston, someone who wants to be extended here in Boston, someone who wants to, you know, I think be a positive force on this team. And, you know, the stuff with the fans, I think that'll work itself out, as opposed to someone who just did not want to be here, someone who was over the Red Sox atmosphere, thought that he was above the rest of the team. There are no egos in Boston right now. When Devers was here, he thought he was better than everyone else, and maybe he was in some capacities. There's no question there. But you can't say that and do that and then try to make it seem like everything's normal and everyone's treated the same. It's not the case. You know, Wilson Contreras is the best hitter on the Boston Red Sox right now. Do you think he's going out throwing that card out to everybody? I'm the best hitter on this team. I'm doing the most damage on this team. No, he's not doing that. You know, I don't think Caleb Durbin's doing the same thing either. You got people that are thinking team first, and that's why this Boston Red Sox 2026 team campaign is going as well as it is. You got a bunch of guys that are working together. There's a collective. It's not one and friends. It's a big difference.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you know, to your point, as far as left-handed hitter, you know, swinging at Fenway Park and knowing it's a home run, honestly, I think the only other person I could think of, I mean, Big Poppy probably in some cases, but Adrian Gonzalez.
Sorry. I should have said present player. I apologize. You are correct. You are absolutely correct.
Interesting, what I was going to say is Adrian Gonzalez, because anytime he hit the ball opposite field, you knew it was going over the monster. That guy had a knack for every time he hit it off the tip of that bat, Oppo, it was going right over the monster, just an absolute line drive. But your point's still well taken. I think, you know, the biggest difference between the two players, I see a comment in here, and I agree. We got Billy, and it's Chris Wilson is a leader and is respected. End of story. And I mean, there's a lot of truth to that. You know, when I really when I break down the two players, and I even consider, you know, my take yesterday on Wilson Contreras, I don't like him getting into a fight with fans. You know, players and stuff like that, cool, whatever. They're all paid athletes. I think the fans is where I draw the line when you start fighting and God forbid you get yourself hurt or someone else, or like, it's not worth it at that point, especially you could put yourself in jeopardy or hurting yourself and then you're really costing the team. But when it comes to the two players personality-wise, like Devers was never an emotional or verbal leader for this team. It was always Bogarts, right? And then Bogarts was gone and we really didn't have it. And all of a sudden, like, it left someone like Trevor Story to become the leader, which in itself, you know, you have a problem if Trevor Story is the leader of your locker room. Super nice guy, I'm sure, puts in a ton of hard work, but he doesn't have the results and he's not in the field enough, specifically in his tenure in Boston, to hold that role, in my opinion. Endeavor's never had it. Wilson, in his short tenure here, 100% has. Players seem to support him. And at the end of the day, with some of the antics, yeah, do I like it all? No, but I would much rather have a guy who's passionate, wears his emotions on his sleeves, maybe loses control a little bit sometimes, but that cares. And, you know, can back it up with his results, but also with the way that he leads a locker room. And, you know, there's enough notes to be said about that in looking at Wilson Contreras and Rafael Devers. You have any other thoughts on those two? All right.
Nope.
Let's shift gears a little bit. Sonny Gray, right? I think at face value, it was an okay start, right? And listen, Sonny Gray is like realistically looking like he might get to 20 wins this season. Another comment from Billy. Billy's on fire in the chat.
Yes.
But it's a realistic possibility, pending he doesn't have starts like tonight, because tonight he got away with it because, let's face it, remove Rafael Devers because we're all passionate about him. This is not a great lineup from the San Francisco Giants. Like, they have major league hitters, but, like, you're not putting up a ton of runs with that lineup on a night-in and night-out basis. On the flip side, if you're Sonny Gray – and you're giving up four runs, like, you play some other teams, they will make you pay. Because when you look at Sonny Gray, even in the inning that he gave up the one run, I mean, that guy hit a fly ball that was almost off the wall that ended that inning with the bases loaded. That could have been much uglier. And if we remember, he got the two outs, they got the bases loaded, they ended up getting that run, and then they got out of it. Same thing. Next inning, he gets two outs really quick, and you're thinking, all right, we're going to just coast. We're up 5-1. This is just going to be an FU game with the San Francisco Giants. Hold on. Two guys on, three-run home run. And then our friend Rafael Devers comes up, does his signature solo shot. You knew it was gone off the bat. It's just the way he looked at it before he even took step. And all of a sudden, now you're looking at a 5-4 game, Sonny Gray getting exposed a little bit. What is your thoughts on how Sonny Gray pitched tonight, how he finished his night, and then going forward with him?
The fact of the matter is, Sonny Gray 16-3, and he should probably be 18-2. He should have won the game that we didn't get. I mean, he didn't allow a run. He went seven innings, didn't get a win. I remember that one. And then there was one where he gave up a couple runs, and he took the L, and we probably should have given him a win there. So instead of 16-3, I really do feel like we should be 18-2. So that's one thing. That's how I feel about Sonny Gray. He has been the most consistent starter for your team in years. In years. And I say that knowing full well who's been on this team. Garrett Crochet, love him. Absolute stud. Unfortunately, your best ability, you know what it is availability. And unfortunately, Garrett Crochet right now not available. I hope he can come back. I hope he can be healthy. I mean, man, Aroldis Chapman, Sonny Gray, 1-2. Damn, I feel bad. I pity a fool. I pity the team that has to face that 1-2. And imagine how much better this team would be if Garrett Crochet was here. Now, we don't operate on wishes and dreams, and hope is not a strategy. The fact of the matter is, Sonny Gray has been a stud. You're absolutely right, Chris, in everything you just said. A little bit of an ugly inning there. He gave up three runs on two hits there. You got the Gilbert home run off of a sweeper. And then as soon as that's over, first pitch pipeline solo shot deep center, Rafi Devers trademark home run at Fenway Park. He is the current major league leader with home runs at Fenway Park. He's not wearing a Red Sox uniform anymore. We know that. And I think that JD Martinez, I think, was also listed on that graphic, but JD Martinez, I don't think, is playing baseball right now. So unless he isn't, I missed it. But yeah, I mean, I'm cool with Sonny Gray doing what he's doing, even if he gives up a couple of home runs back to back. The rest of the team absolutely rallied, and the way you want to look at it, however you want to look at it, he gave up 2 home runs, 3 total runs. That negates the Wilson Contreras 3-run bomb. Wilson's not going to say anything. Sonny's not going to say anything. Sonny still goes out there and shoves and tries to deal. No pitcher is perfect. He's still operating with a 2.79 ERA. That's matching what he had a couple of years ago. He's been way better than elite. If you have a sub-3.2 ERA in the American League, you're pretty good. I understand the competition isn't as intense, but when you have a sub-3 ERA, you don't get 16-3 for a record by accident. You have to do your job. So I'm very content with how Sonny Gray has pitched. I'm very curious to know how the 2027 year is going to look for Sonny Gray, because we're going to have some questions next year for this team. He's pitching like an absolute star. He's pitching like a one. And before the season started, I'm pretty sure we were looking at Sonny Gray as like your 3-ish behind Ranger Suarez after Garrett Crochet. At least, right? So am I content? Am I feeling good? Yes. Do I think that Sonny Gray can deal? Absolutely. I don't think he's any stranger to what the expectation is to pitch through September and into October. The other pitchers have not been stretched out the same way. And I know this is a new age of baseball, but the fact of the matter is Sonny Gray is the only starter that you currently have that is prepared to pitch all season, get into October, and not have any issues. That's it.
You know, it's funny. You say that Rafael Devers has the most home runs in Fenway Park. If Aaron Judge didn't play at Yankee Stadium, he'd probably have the most home runs at Yankee Stadium for average players at this point as well.
He probably would.
Be pretty funny. But no, all your points are well taken and good points. I mean, I especially when you look at Sonny Gray as far as the most consistent in a single season over the last couple of years, and that's with Garrett Crochet last year. It's hard to argue, because when you really even look at last year, Garrett Crochet, as good as he was, if we remember in the beginning of the year, the team was scoring runs for the pitchers. The pitchers sucked. I mean, we were losing games 11-9, 13-11, 9-8. I mean, it was wild before we kind of turned it around. But Garrett Crochet had his stinkers last year. Like, he was the guy who would stop a losing streak once the team got good. No doubt about it. But he had his moments where we were like, damn, like, is it starting to get to him? Is he injured? Is he getting to his innings limit, like for a career high? But nonetheless, I mean, Sonny Gray, what makes it so much, I don't want to say more spectacular, but more impressive is, number one, to your point, we did not expect Sonny Gray to be a number one of any rotation, let alone the Boston Red Sox. That was Garrett Crochet's position. We didn't get Ranger Suarez until months after we traded for Sonny Gray. Sonny Gray was like in the middle of November out of nowhere. And we were like, okay. And it was right after Craig Breslow was like, oh, we know we need a number two, which is why we were all scratching our heads like, okay, well, Sonny Gray's not a number two for any team, let alone the Boston Red Sox. And now he's our number one, and he's arguably the most consistent pitcher we've had in a decade. So it's a wild thing to say. Is it sustainable beyond this year? I hope so. I mean, even if he just goes back to being the number two we thought we were getting, I'm fine with it. I mean, just looking at his age, his makeup, and his history, I don't think he's going to be able to do this again. However, it doesn't matter. We're living in the now. So right now, he should be competing for a Cy Young, and if he's not, it's an absolute travesty at this point, because the guy more than likely will get 20 wins and has been absolutely lights out, has been a stopgap. Yes, he's had his rough moments. The difference between his rough moments and some of the others in the last couple of years, including Garrett Crochet, like today was a rough spot for him, but we were in the game. He kept us at least within reach and didn't relinquish the lead. I can't say that about every Red Sox pitcher. Some of their ugliest games, the game is over before you even got your butt on the seat for the couch to watch the game, or in the seat at the stadium. And it's not a great feeling. So, point well taken. He's by far been the most consistent pitcher. I'm excited to see what continues to happen for him. I'm not really concerned from an injury perspective. It's more of just like, I'm always worried. It's like, is someone going to finally just figure him out? Because like, how all of a sudden is he this dominant? But I'll take it. Any other points? Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I think you bring up a really good point about him being in the Cy Young conversation. Before the year started, everyone, I think, thought, okay, it's going to be Tarik Skubal. Then Skubal goes to the Dodgers. Big surprise. And then Cam Schlittler ends up being the front runner. Where do you think Cam Schlittler is on the wins total, if you haven't already looked? And then also, how many wins do you think he has since July 7th? That would make it 7 appearances. How many wins do you think he has in that window? And then how many wins do you think he has on the season? I don't think that's the deciding factor for the Cy Young. What do you think he has?
How many wins do I think he's had since July 7th? Well, the Yankees have been – well, now they're doing well, but they were fumbling for a little bit. I'm going to say he maybe has one win since July 7th.
He has one win since July 7th. Okay. They have only won one game for him.
I know there's been a lot of games where he's left the game tied or with no run scored and they still lose the game and he gets a no decision.
They lose – yes. Two of those 7 games, they lost in extras. Two of them they lost with no support. One of them he shoved, and so he absolutely destroyed Philadelphia, which is wild. But he sits with an 11-6 record, a 2.16 ERA, which is really good. Oh, sorry, I forgot.
I was going to get 13 wins, to be honest, but that's all right.
I trust you. You seem like a trustworthy guy. So 13 wins, and Schlittler has been here all year, blowing everyone out in strikeouts. He's got 193. He's going to have over 200. There's no question. His whip is under 1. I still think that Schlittler will end up edging somebody like Sonny Gray, even if Gray gets to 20. Because Schlittler's overall numbers, regardless of the win total, if he goes, 14-9 with a 2-4, 230 strikeouts and a 1.01 whip, that's insane for a pitcher who has not been in the league all that long. This is really his first taste of full year baseball. Last year, he was a temp guy. He'd only had a handful of starts, 10, 15 starts. So I still think Sonny, I agree with you. I think Sonny will be in the conversation. I don't think he's going to be snubbed because I think that Schlittler's overall numbers are just going to be too much to ignore, even if Sonny Gray goes 21-3 or 22-3, something like, didn't Cliff Lee go 22-3, something like that? I have to look it up.
I think the only way I know Porcello had 22. Oh yeah, actually Jules just said Porcello's the last guy to win Cy because he had 22 wins. But I also think you're right as well as far as with
Cliff Lee went 22-3 in 2008, 31 starts. He went 22-3 with a 2.54 ERA, struck out 170 and 223. That's just dumb. That's insane. Yeah, insane. Cliff Lee was an absolute monster.
The only way I see Schlittler not winning, and listen, Schlittler totally deserves it. I think where I get upset is that I feel like Sonny Gray's not even in the conversation. And to me, that's where I'm like, it just doesn't feel right. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
what are we doing?
Right.
But the only way I think Schlittler doesn't get it is if he gets absolutely shelled in, like, let's say,
could happen,
3 or 4 of the next 5, 6, 7 starts for the rest of the season. And if somehow he gets shelled or really costs the Yankees in a big spot where they maybe drop a couple spots, I don't think they're going to miss the playoffs. Like, that's not going to happen. But let's say the Red Sox leapfrog them. And it's a matter of Schlittler's starts are the reason why they end up missing out on that spot. Like, that's where I could see where the record could be the difference. If the ERA, you kind of close the gap just a little bit, where then you're like, okay, well, what's more important? Have more strikeouts, but 6, 7 less wins? That's where I think you could make the argument of that. Yeah, strikeouts are nice, but strikeouts are important because strikeouts should help you win. And if there's a seven-win gap and your ERA is the same, to me, tiebreaker goes to Sonny Gray.
It could be. It could be. We'll see.
Do I think it happens? No. But nonetheless.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, gotta be realistic.
All right. So enough of Sonny Gray. Again, shaky start, but I have confidence he'll figure it out. Like, that's to me what the worst looks like of Sonny Gray. Fingers crossed. Let's talk about Miller. Guy that we got from the San Francisco Giants for Marcelo Meyer, who, by the way, shocker everyone, will not be coming to Boston. He's at In and Out right now celebrating his newly found injured foot. So I don't think anyone should be shocked. We're not going to see Marcelo play baseball, specifically in Fenway Park, for the San Francisco Giants because he's hurt. However, we trade Marcelo Meyer for Miller, and the guy comes in, game was still a run game at that point, or maybe it was 2-run game at that point, and just absolutely shuts the door, turns that thing over to Chapman, and it was lights out, game over. What was your thoughts of Miller, number one, in this performance, and then even just in general, because I feel like Miller doesn't get talked about nearly enough.
So, as I was saying before we got on, I think Eric Miller's a dog. That's not a guy that you want to deal with. And Eric Miller, if you look at his numbers, dude, if Chapman, for whatever reason, goes down, I'm not worried. This guy in 8 games so far with the Red Sox, 14 punchouts, 8 1/3, 3 walks, 1 run not earned, 5 hits. He's been absolutely superb. Has not had a save opportunity. Only had 4 saves as a member of the Giants. And honestly, if you're Marcelo Meyer, the only thing that should be going through your mind is you got traded for a reliever when you were originally supposed to be a part of a package for a player that is currently, we don't even know. We don't even know where Ketel Marte is right now.
Where's Waldo?
That moron is, you know, off gallivanting doing whatever. And I'm sorry, but like, if you can't handle the pressures of Arizona with quite possibly one of the more chill managers, you would never last in Boston, New York, Chicago, Philadelphia. I can keep going, but you have no business in a big market if you can't handle Arizona. What I will continue to say, you got traded for a reliever and you're not coming to Boston. Honestly, it's the best thing for you. Best time to accidentally or seriously get injured, because you would get owned, eaten alive, because Miller has done nothing but shove since he's been in Boston. If you thought that this was a fleece trade, oh my God, egg on your face, because Marcelo Meyer.
It was a fleece trade for the Red Sox.
For the Red Sox, right? And everyone's like, oh my God, look at Marcelo's numbers. He's absolutely shoving a AAA. I don't give a crap what you're doing in AAA. That does nothing for the big league team. The big league roster needs the offense. Who gives a crap about AAA? Meanwhile, Eric Miller is like totally playing patty cakes. That's the guy that was, you know, throwing it in the Cincinnati Reds' face. I think I told you and a couple of the guys in the group this, that I sat there as soon as I saw this clip, I'm like, oh my God, yes, he was giving me Joe Kelly type vibes. That is the guy you don't F with. That's the guy that they paint a mural in Boston of. That's the guy that if Chapman, for whatever reason, is unavailable, not getting it done, I would give the ball to him over Garrett Whitlock. That is how confident I am in Eric Miller. Another left-handed shover. He is going to pile it higher and deeper on anybody that faces him. And he wants to give it to San Francisco good and hard, because truth be told, that's the team that said, yeah, you're not even worth a player that can't even play. We'll trade you away. So he's got no reason to just absolutely ram it to his former club. Honestly, I wouldn't be surprised to see Miller play in every single game and shove 3 straight times. Give him the next 3 days after the series is over. I'm totally cool with that. He wants to shove it against San Francisco, and more power to him, because the player that they got for you isn't going to be an impact player. He's not even going to be there. So you just being present, you already won. So yes, answer to your question, as I went on a long tirade, I am so in love with the fact that Eric Miller, aka Joe Kelly 2.0 from the left side, is on my team. That guy is the same. He's like 6'5", 270. That's a no F with guy. Don't mess with that guy.
Yeah, he's a much bigger guy than Joe Kelly.
Yeah. Nobody puts baby in the corner. Absolutely zero people put Eric Miller in the corner. I'm done.
No, it's all a lot to unpack there for me, but thank you. All good points. You know, the funny thing is, since you're talking about consistency, as much as I love Joe Kelly, he did have a little bit of Craig Kimbrel into him, where like there were moments where he'd load the bases and you're just like, oh no. And then he'd find a way out of it sometimes, but he did have a little bit of like, he's going to get us into some trouble here and we're not going to like it to him. But when he was on, he was on. So far, limited sample size, but Miller has not shown me that. He's been much more consistent, absolutely lights out. And I 100% agree with you. I trust him over Garrett Whitlock even when he's healthy. I love Garrett Whitlock, especially in the regular season. In the postseason, he scares the crap out of me. Yes.
One more thing. Eric Miller's under team control for 3 more years, which they mentioned on the air. Sorry. Yeah. Okay.
That's okay.
You say it. You say it.
No. We were talking about, because both of us didn't realize it, admittedly. And then they said it on the game, and I was like, oh, my God. Like, I love the trade already, like, based on the results so far. When I heard it was 3 years of control, I was like, oh, it's an absolute – we'll take it. Like, yeah, we laughed at Craig for getting absolutely schooled on trades, specifically to the San Francisco with Rafael Devers. Not that this makes up for it, but it's like, it at least right. We fleeced them now in this particular trade, because, granted, Marcelo Meyer at one point, Red Sox fans, was supposed to be not only the future, he was supposed to be the savior of the Boston Red Sox. There was, long before Roman Anthony, it was Marcelo Meyer, and then Roman Anthony overtook him at the last mile of that race. Marcelo Meyer was supposed to be an absolute superstar. The only question was, is he going to be hurt? Not only in his tenure of when he wasn't hurt was he not a superstar, unless you're talking about him flashing the glove in the field. Not at the plate, that's for damn sure. But then, of course, he had a stint of where he's consistently injured. Then we trade him, and he's injured. And I can't even imagine being Marcelo Meyer. And the sad part is, I don't even know if he truly cares. I truly believe he's probably sitting in an In-N-Out Burger right now, just eating a burger, and be like, oh, I'm so happy to be on the West Coast. Because I would feel like absolute crap if I was supposed to be pretty much the next coming of Nomar Garciaparra, and I'm supposed to come and save the Boston Red Sox, a premier major league franchise with the history that they have, and you get traded for Eric Miller. And that's nothing against Eric Miller, but at the end of the day, cornerstone shortstop everyday player who's supposed to be a superstar being traded for a reliever that's not an elite closer, I mean, that's a little wild. And it's even more wild, we got the guy who's not the closer, and we fleeced him giving away the shortstop. So I'm happy about that.
So I was going to say real quick, you talk about the absolute fleece job with the Devers thing. Do you think we fleeced them or you think they fleeced us?
Oh, they fleeced us. Only because it very much like the Mookie Betts trade, we have nothing to show for it now. So,
but is that whose fault is that? I'm going to play devil's advocate here for a second here. So the four players, I'm going to preface this. I'm going to give you the trade. Rafael Devers gets traded for Jose Bayo, who is a 21-year-old pitcher who's playing in Salem right now. He's 2-5 with a 3.92 ERA. James Tibbs III, who has 26 home runs, 92 RBIs in 115 AAA games. He's hitting .299 and shoving.
I know. Don't talk to me about that. I don't even want to hear it. We traded him for Jeremy LeCair.
Yeah. Kyle Harrison, and then the last player in that move was Jordan Hicks, right? Hicks is now a Chicago White Sox. He's got a 3.32 ERA in 41 games. He has a save. He's got 45 strikeouts, 30 innings, a 2-1 record. Kyle Harrison, 10-3 this year, 122 strikeouts, 98 and a third. I think that we were the ones that kind of self-fleeced. We created the problem that was the fleece.
That's a fair point. You traded Tibbs
for nothing. You got a couple of months rental from the fireballing Dustin May. You gave away Jordan Hicks because he just was a disaster. Bayo is still here, and Kyle Harrison is now gone. Kyle Harrison was
we got him for Caleb Durbin.
For Durbin, right? So was that really a fleece? I mean, Caleb Durbin's looking like a star right now.
If we extend Durbin and Tibbs comes up and does what I think he's going to do, because that was the one that hurt me the most. That was the guy who was interesting to me in that trade.
Me too.
That's it. Like, so I'm going to hold on to that for the rest of my life now. But if he comes up and is even half decent, and then assuming we extend Durbin, I actually do think it's fair to say it is a much more even, possibly even Red Sox slightly fleecing San Francisco, because I do not think that Rafael Devers, and as we can see, I mean, let's face it, we would not expect Rafael Devers to be putting up production that's close to Wilson Contreras if he was here in Boston. And he would maybe not be, because if he was in Boston, he might hit more home runs. His strikeouts are only getting worse, which was a problem already. He's not a great fielder. Like, that contract is not going to age well. We are saving that money pending we spend it and put it where it should go. You could make the argument that we actually did fleece him. I think that the only thing I would say is in the actual season it happened, I think it's fair to say that the San Francisco fleeced us last year when it happened. On the flip side, long term, it could be us. But in the moment right now, we fleece them in real time. So it's what it is. But your points are well taken. It's fair. And the more that I think about it, there's actually more than an argument to be made there that we possibly fleece them, especially if we extend Caleb Durbin. Because that guy is a dirt dog. Love him. Needs to be in Boston. He is as close to what you're going to get of another Destin Pedroia second coming in that infield.
Yeah, I can't add anything to that. Absolutely.
Trying to think what else you want to talk about there, my friend.
Rest of the series, man. I didn't get a chance to talk about this. Do you know who's pitching tomorrow?
You know, I did yesterday when I looked at it. I have no idea. I don't want to say anything. Let me look it up for you.
That's not fair. I should not have set you up for a lack of success. Okay. That's my bad. So we got Sandoval going up against, I think it's Blade Tidwell.
You're right. Yes, it is Sandoval Tidwell. Now that you say it, I know it because I remember hearing it yesterday.
Yeah, Blade Tidwell was a New York Met. So I have to look back and see how that trade happened. I'm not really nervous about Tidwell, but unfortunately, I'm not really, you know, Sandoval just doesn't really necessarily move the needle for me. If Patrick Sandoval could actually get back on the right path, that'd be great. You got an ERA just south of 5. He hasn't been doing great his last couple starts. His last one was awful against Pittsburgh. He allowed 7 runs. I want to give it to the Boston Red Sox only because I'm not a fan of the San Francisco Giants, and I think that Tidwell is also probably not going to do great. But as Jeremy would always say, and as he has said in the past, I reserve the right to change my opinion. I think that we are going to split the series. I'm not sure if I'm 100%. We're going to win game 2, maybe toss game 3. They have we have Jake Bennett going up against Carson Wisenhunt, who's also not done great. In 7 starts, he's 3-4 with an ERA of 7. He's also not sexy, but I don't know. I'm not sure. Maybe you have some better insight than I do on this one.
So I think when you look at it at face value on paper and just even the way that the season's gone, we should have the advantage the next 2 nights. This was definitely, I think, where we had the biggest advantage. Even though Webb is their strongest pitcher in the series for San Francisco, Sonny Gray was ours, and he's just a better pitcher right now currently. I think Sandoval, if we get closer to the best of what we've seen of Sandoval, I think we sweep this series. If you get the worst part of Sandoval, that's what scares me, because even though there's nothing about Tidwell that scares me, we know that Patrick Sandoval, when he is not at his best, he could give up a couple crooked numbers, a couple innings in a row, and this could be a game you lose 9-8. I could 100% see it, because I think we will score runs on Tidwell. Yeah, but I also know that if Sandoval is not pitching well, they will score runs. I mean, Rafael Devers will have a field day alone. It's funny, the Jake Bennett start, the more I think about it, because I said the same thing with Peyton Tolley. Tolley was not going to win every single start. It just wasn't going to happen. We won 7 in a row that he started. He was due for
crazy.
A stinker. Yeah, right. He was due for a stinker, especially with the way he was just pitching. Jake Bennett's been about as bad can be, especially with the start that he had. He's due for a win at this point. The only thing that concerns me, you got the innings limit that he's reached or almost reached at this point. It's the most he's ever pitched. He might just be fatigued, and it's not a mental aspect or like a matter of making tweaks. He might just be gassed, and like you might not be able to do anything. It was almost like Yoshida when he came to America. It's like you saw 2/3 into that season when he came up to the Boston Red Sox. Like he was gassed, and we were all like, oh, maybe it's just mechanics or he's just got to find his swing. It's like, nope, nothing changed. He's just gassed because we play 40 more games than they do in Japan. So that's the difference. Right. Yeah. And that could be the Jake Bennett effect. I don't know. But I do think that if we win the game tomorrow, I am confident we will sweep, because I do think that Jake Bennett is due. And I don't predict a sweep very often.
You don't. That's very true. It's very honorable and honest of you to call yourself out. And I'm sure you'll make yourself accountable if this doesn't end up working out. I think we're going to sweep. or sorry, I think we're going to split. I'm not sure. Me personally, that's how I think it's going. Jake Bennett, in his last five starts, has not allowed less than three earned runs. He has also only gotten one quality start. In the seven appearances before that, he had gotten five of seven quality starts, and only one game had he allowed more than two earned runs. So he was absolutely shoving in that little stretch, right? So he went a window of, in six starts, or even if you want to look at it, in eight starts, he went 6-1. Absolutely shoved. Framing fan, that is for you, good sir. I wanted to make sure that we kept you honest. And if you do have something, bourbon, vodka of your choosing, you do the right thing and you take a shot right now. All jokes aside, I absolutely love it. I love the sweep call. I hope you're right. I don't think I'm right.
For the record, I'm just
calling. I hope you're right. Yeah. 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 I mean, we'll see. We'll see. I'm happy we won the first one. I mean, at this point, the object of the game is win the first game of the series in a three-game set, split the rest. Win the first, split the rest. That's it. That's all you have to do. In a four-game set, win the first game, win one of the next three, and you split the series. That's fine by me if you go 2-2 in a four-game set. You don't need to go 3 out of 4, 2 out of 3 every single one. You've got to be realistic. This isn't, you know, the LA Dodgers, and even they've been scuffling like crazy. You know, their manager called out their entire team saying they need to figure it the bleep out. If the Boston Red Sox can just focus on getting the next out, get the next out, and then focus on the next one. That's all you have to do. You can do that. I promise you, you will take this series.
Yeah, Cree. I think that game one of any series, especially for the Boston Red Sox, but I think it goes for any team, is the most important, especially when it's a three-game set. I mean, granted, we did win that A's game that started the losing streak by a football score, and then we lose the next two. But like, you just set yourself up so much better to be able to win these series. Because to your point, you get the first one, team's feeling good. The other team now knows they're not going to come into your ballpark and sweep you and make a statement. The best they can do is try to take the next two and win the series. And as long as you get off to a good start in game two, like, you've already got them on the ropes. It's no more them coming in and having their way. They're now fighting for their life. And I think if you get put a team when you're in your home ballpark in a position where they feel like they have to fight just to survive, that is a good thing that you can do. And it is the best thing that you can do. I think as far as, you know, because I never mentioned it, your vibes now, you're at Jeremy's height. And I think
where I'm feeling right now, I'm just slightly looking down at his forehead, which is very bright and shiny and pretty. So it's like a 6'8" range, like in that scope, I'd say 6'8".
Yeah. Okay. 6'8". So I'm going to probably be closer to Jeremy's height. I'm probably at around like a 6.5. I've seen enough, even in the midst of their losing streak where it was like, there were some ugly games in there, don't get me wrong, but like the tail end and, you know, and then coming back into winning some games and even like some of the Toronto series, it's like, all right, there's enough good there now where I'm like, okay, as long as they could just find consistency coming out of this, which they seem to have done. And I think if they win two series in a row, one against a team that was like fighting for a playoff spot and then one that we 100% should beat, but those are the teams we've been struggling against, especially with one with Devers looking to come here and kick the what out of us. I would feel a lot better. And I think if we get that series, that's going to probably bring me closer to you, 6.8, 7 range. Cause I think the highest I ever was probably like a 7.5, 7.8 in the middle of the historic run.
Has Dougie Sunshine ever even been below like an 8? I feel like Dougie Sunshine, that's the person I want to call, like, if I get a flat tire, if I get pulled over.
There was a moment.
Just give me some good news.
But before we went on the streak, and when it got really ugly, I think when we turned the podcast to fire Brezzo Podcast, when he was coming on with Dougie Rain Clouds, like, he was a little bit down. He had to be lower than 8 to come on the show with a Dougie Rain Clouds.
Okay.
And if he was even talking about, like, yeah, just sell the team. So, like.
Wow. Bold, bold comment for Doug, who lives at Fenway Park. I mean, that's a big deal. Nice cup, by the way. Yeah, he went from Dougie Sunshine to Dougie Moonshine. Like, it was like from the highlight to the low light there really quick. Yeah, interesting. Okay, because I feel like that really is the positive ball of energy on the podcast. The guy that, you need like a little bit of good luck or a little good juju. That's the person you talk to because he's got the good vibes, right? That's the guy. That's the one.
Oh yeah. When it comes to well-roundedness of support and like positive vibes, it's 100% Dougie.
That's 100% Dougie. Doug, you're getting some love right now.
Juan brings the positive vibes too. If the player's Dominican, if they aren't Dominican, it's 50-50 at best.
So I have a 50-50% chance. Is that what you're saying? Of being in Juan's good graces?
Pretty much.
Juan, I should be higher than that. That's all I'm going to say. I got nothing else to add. This was great. I'm happy we won. I'm happy we got to do the show together. Anything else you want to add?
No. It's getting a little chilly here without the shirts. So we have been the Fire Breslow podcast presented by the Bastards of Boston Baseball. Thank you for stopping by. Have a great night.